Senior Focus. Welcome everyone, I'm Anne-Marie Khoury, I'm your presenter for this edition of Senior Focus. And today is International Day of the Older Person. So, as this is a program aimed at 50 plus folk, four generations of seniors, I think it's very timely for me to just mention this. And we of course do lots of things around raising awareness about older people's needs and positive ageing, what we can do to age positively, and what sort of structures are needed in society and by councils and so on, and input. And so I'm not going to talk about that today. Today's topic is transport and infrastructure. The bones of getting around in our lives, of sorting our business out and how we do it. And it's very important, obviously, and everybody has very strong opinions, particularly about transport. But even more strongly, I think about infrastructure, that we don't have enough of it, of the right sort in the right places, and that we aren't prepared for the future. So on that note, I'm introducing our guest today is John Watson, an Auckland councillor for the Auckland ward, and he's chair of the Transport and Infrastructure Council Committee, which is a whole of council committee that makes some pretty weighty decisions at times. Welcome, John.
Good afternoon, Anne-Marie.
It's very good to have you on the program. We'll have plenty to talk about, and we will have you back because you won't be able to do it all in one program. But I'd like to kick off by talking about transport and the fact that part of the reason we ended up with the super city was because the transport congestion and the arguments about improving public transport weren't able to be sorted out amongst the six councils. And so by having one entity, it was thought that things would be resolved more quickly. However, we seem to have a different kind of beast now. We have Auckland Transport on one hand, and we have Auckland Council on the other. And we also have the government and funding coming in for big projects. And so that creates its own kind of structural difficulties and barriers. So we'll be talking about this. But first of all, I want to bring in the question about how come AT, Auckland Transport, manages to upset so many residents with its projects across various problems of the city. And I'm wondering what your take on this is, John.
That's a good question, Anne-Marie. I guess just to set the scene, I'll go back to what you've just mentioned there, and that was Auckland Transport, when it was set up by the then national government back in 2009, and that was through Act of Parliament, was basically set up as a quite separate entity. And as you said, the theory behind that was that it would do away with the bickering and the disagreement and the lack of unity between the legacy councils. So that's an important starting point, because certainly up until this term of the new mayor, Wayne Brown, is they've got their own board, which is eight members on it. They get funded by the council and NZTA, Waka Kotahi. So they get their money from the ratepayers and the taxpayers. But up until relatively recently, they've largely been left to their own devices in terms of council oversight goes. So for the last 6 years under the previous mayor, Mr. Gough, there was no transport committee at Auckland Council. And in fact, he withdrew the two councillors who are on the AT board. So you had a situation for over half a decade where there wasn't really any direct line of sight through to Auckland Transport, or much in the way of oversight. And I think, this is a roundabout way of getting to your question, but what that bred, amongst other things, was really a lack of accountability back to the public. So you had, over those years, any number of kind of instances where communities were up in arms saying they weren't consulted or Auckland Transport was doing something that was causing outrage. But in reality, that in some ways was down to the council, which really just was pretty much hands off, despite the phenomenal percentage of funds that go from ratepayers to fund the transport costs from around the Auckland region. So I guess if the word culture is one that's much overused these days, but I guess if I was to sum it up in terms of a culture, it's been a culture where the government of the day set the entity up with this view of being independent. They certainly grasped that opportunity, and the council, through kind of lack of intervention, reinforced that. And you got the predictable disconnect then between a large bureaucracy and the actual public that they're meant to serve.
Yes, and that is really hard to swallow for a lot of people, because as you point out, a large proportion of our rates is going to this entity. I think the figure is somewhere about 40% of the residential rates.
Well, I mean, just to give you an example in dollar terms to people, so the property rates for this year, roughly, collected from all the ratepayers is, in the vicinity of $2 billion, whereas Auckland Transport's budget and its capital works are about $1.1 billion, and its operating costs are about another $1.1 billion. So that's a big, big percentage that's going to transport. So there really needs to have been a far closer oversight of the organisation, how it's been performing it, and where the money's going. And to his credit, the present mayor has made attempts to kind of redress that. I think that was certainly his pitch in the election, the mayoral election, was making Auckland Transport more accountable to the communities and being made more aware of its requirement to serve those communities as well as it can. And that goes to, information, it goes to the way people are treated. So I guess I'll leave it up to people to decide themselves how far that's progressed, but it comes on the back of over a decade of less than optimum surveillance, in my view.
Thank you for setting the scene so well. As we move on, I thought it might be quite useful for you to talk about your role on the committee, not just as chair, but how this committee functions and what sorts of transport agenda items you deal with.
Yes. So I'm the chair of this new committee, and it's only been going less than a year now. And you said in the intro, every councillor is on that committee, including the mayor. So that's what they call a committee of the whole. We meet once a month, but we have all manner of workshops and meetings and whatnot, usually in between. And I guess this first year is really just been trying to get a handle on what's happening in our transport network, because as you also said, we have the government that's involved in these massive big projects like the Northern Motorway improvements, the big motorway works down south, down Papakura and Drury, Penlink up on the Whangaparoa Peninsula. These huge big projects that really are the big ticket items that are, multi-billion dollar projects that in the past we just had virtually no interaction with at all. They come along, they announce a project, they take whatever number of years to build it, and that's it. So one of the first things we've been trying to do this year is to talk to the people in Waka Kotahi, NZTA, who are actually very amenable to discussing things and taking on board Auckland Council's view, so that obviously they're building these massive big capital projects, and we need to have more of a role and not exactly overseeing them, but working with NZTA so that it's the best outcome that eventuates from this huge investment. Similarly with Kiwi Rail, so Kiwi Rail runs the tracks on the rail networks, and again we've engaged with them, and their other entity that's keen to talk to the council and tell us, you know, what's going on, what are the problems, you know, what are the challenges, what's happening on the ground. And so that's really useful, just to have the involvement in the first instance of these big transport entities, in the case of NZTA, bigger than Auckland Council itself, because it does all of New Zealand, and to be working with them. So we try and integrate things, as opposed to be burrowing away in little silos of, you know, one crowd doing their bit and the other one doing another and not talking together. So one of the things that we have been working upon a bit this term is to come up with an overall plan that brings everything together. I mean, the council's got plans for Africa, you know, it's plans can almost be an end in them itself, unfortunately, but the mayor again has tried to come up with a plan that pulls all these things together in a pragmatic, sensible way. And in some ways it's just a reflection of what everyone can see that's happening on the ground. So the projects that are there, that are the ones that are getting built now and the ones that will come in the near future, and just tying them all together so people can see what's happening. And to be fair, if you do travel around in Auckland, you know, if you get the rail out south, or you know, you drive up north now, you know, anywhere north of the bridge, right up to Warkworth, you can go up and motorway, you can see there's been some big progress forward, and that it will, you know, it will integrate, it will come together. And as much as there is congestion and a lot of dissatisfaction, there are a lot of things that have happened and more bigger ones that are coming on board, you know, not least of which is the CRL, which, you know, has been going since about 2016, but which will, you know, finally open up probably around about 2026.
Well, that's a very good overview, and I think most of us, when we move around, have got some awareness that things are changing. I mean, there's a lot of public art appearing through some of these projects too, that we never saw the likes of before, which I think is really good for people. It softens the landscape somewhat, and it gives people a sense of identity. But one thing that I had experienced as a local board member was in the sandwich with the community, was actually what was going on at the local level in town centre planning, and noticing that engineers would come from Auckland Transport and talk about particular problems and how they might be solved. And they might do a throwaway comment like, we're only putting in two bus stops here because we don't think there's much need to expand this. And, you know, I would sit there and my mouth would drop open and I would think, well, goodness, there's 26,000 homes going in just around the corner, new housing development. We're going to need probably six bus stops. How come they don't know this?
Yes, yeah, that's a really telling observation. I think you would see that echoed around the Auckland region, where what's really been lacking is this awareness of breaking Auckland down a bit, rather than trying to deal with it as if it's just this one big nebulous entity from Pukekohe to Wellsford, where in actual fact the demands or the expectations or the solutions to any number of communities are very much localised. And that, I think that has got lost in translation, and I'm certainly experiencing that myself with the community I represent. I live out at the end of Whangaparoa, and for the last 25 years we've had this, you know, this really good ferry service, so it's by far and away the easiest, fastest, most comfortable way to get down to the city. You just, you know, just fly down direct, even though the ferries are old, you know, and run down and in recent times really unreliable, but a service nonetheless that makes a lot of sense for, you know, a 15 kilometre long peninsula. And Auckland Transport out of the blue have come along and said, you know, it's their intention to close this ferry down in in a number of years' time. And that's just brought a huge kickback from the local community, a significant number of whom have purchased in the area in Gulf Harbour because this ferry service operates, and that's how they get down to the town for their work. So it's been factored into their choice of where they live. Now, the kind of dismissive attitude that's been displayed towards the community and the lack of awareness of really the dynamics of this transport network has been really quite a revelation, even after all the years I've been in there. And I would suspect that people elsewhere in Auckland might make a similar comment, that sort of local awareness that was perhaps in a lot more tangible form with the older councils, legacy councils, has been lost in the kind of big corporate view of Auckland.
Yes, and this is really part and parcel of the difficulties that come out of the fact that Auckland as a city strung out like a ribbon across a thin isthmus. It's one of the longest urban entities in the world, and it's not positioned well to absorb another million people and their cars. So it has to have a better public transport network, but we seem to be very stuck in terms of actually working out solutions that are going to free people up.
Yes, I can remember when I first came on the council, the then CEO of Auckland Transport, David Warburton, said, and they were spending a lot of money on big transport projects at that time, he said that despite all this huge investment that was going in, the congestion problem was actually going to get worse. So it was one of those really telling statements where you're putting a truckload of money in and you've got all big projects happening, and you know the kind of authorities in the field are saying, well, actually at the end of all this it's actually going to be more congested and it's going to be slower getting around, and that was just because of the sheer dynamics of the population growth, which it just couldn't keep up with. I suppose we've slowed down a bit over the COVID period, but if you know, at one stage here, Auckland was adding, I think, a city the size of Tauranga every 3 years in its population. And my view has been that, you know, that's just simply not sustainable over a protracted period of time, unless you have a massive investment. And we all know that that's beyond the realms of the council, which is, you know, got some pretty significant financial constraints now, having, you know, borrowed its way to about 12 odd billion in debt, and increasingly the government too, because of you know, the various calls on their finances that have been made. So your point is a good one. It's not one that's often raised in planning circles, but the question is really, at what point that does a city, or and particularly one on a constrained, you know, geographic location, meet its limit, you know, particularly when you have other parts of the country that really could do with, you know, more people going there and packed, restoring infrastructure that they once had when their populations were bigger, but which in Auckland just adds more strain, more expense, and ultimately more congestion despite the big investment you're putting in.
Yes, now that actually reflects some of the commentary about the proposals to deal with the second harbour crossing, which obviously is one of those big elephant in the room type situations, because on one hand, yes, there are certain concrete proposals favoured by the government, but on the other hand, Treasury has got concerns about the cost and of that, and they have also got concerns about the side effects, the impact on the carbon footprint, whether we can meet our international obligations of reducing our carbon footprint in time, and what will be the flow-on effects from this crossing. So I'm wondering about whether you have a view about this.
Yeah, well, I came to New Zealand on the Ruaheni with my mum and dad from Scotland not long after the Auckland Harbour Bridge was actually opened, which of course was a game changer for everyone, from Northcote Point northwards. And I can remember paying the tolls at the toll booths on my way over on a motorbike, and was it 10 cents there? I remember always trying to get rid of all my loose change, were 1 cent and 2 cent pieces when I went to the toll. But we remember how, in the scheme of things, how relatively quickly that was paid off, you know, which was a kind of phenomenal achievement, really, when you think of it. You remember the Japanese clip-ons that were put on quite soon after. And that's been it since, 1959. We haven't, we've had the ongoing stories of, is it at its sell-by date or not? And things seem to have transformed in recent years, where there doesn't quite seem to be the same degree of urgency as there was once earlier to have another option there. But then, when that truck toppled over and, a year or so ago, whenever it was, that just shows you how vulnerable Auckland is if anything happens to the Harbour Bridge. So the proposals that were put out, I agree with you, they just seem incredibly ambitious and expensive, as opposed to other options that might have dealt with kind of a more cost-effective or pragmatic structure beside the existing bridge or whatever. But certainly, the underground tunnel all the way up to Albany is pretty fantastical in my view. But I think irrespective, that is a real source of vulnerability in the whole transport network that connects the north, to the city and south and everywhere else. And I don't think there were probably too many people who came out of that whole consultation process and preferred option that felt too much confidence that, this is the way forward and this is doable, and what's more, it will be picked up and done. So that's a little disappointing given kind of the money and the resource that went into the presentation of the options for the harbour crossing. So I something needs to be done and certainly needs to be prepared for sooner rather than later. We've been hearing this. There's been a phenomenal number of studies and proposals put up with the harbour crossing over many years, but we do really need to decide on one that's doable and hopefully that there would be cross-party support to, because that's going to be a central government initiative. The council won't be able to bring too many lollies to that particular party, so it's important that council and government really decide on what is a doable solution and in a reasonable space of time, as opposed to the sort of just pushing things out and the apparent willingness to act as if money's no object, where in actual fact it is going to be an object. We don't want it to be a suboptimal solution, perhaps happened with the original bridge, given that they had to put the clip-ons very quickly. But yes, it's that's something that's been the council has been just engaged with rather superficially, I'm sorry to say, but we certainly share the need to get something that's comprehensive and doable on the books and preparations made for starting in a timely manner.
Yes, well, I understand that the Commission for Infrastructure Minister Megan Woods was pushing for the solution to be out there, but at the same time, the Treasury advice from Leper and Tebbs was very much along the lines of, well, we're very deeply concerned at the options analysis was only limited to high-cost infrastructure solutions, and that they hadn't looked at non-built and low-cost solutions. So, as you've just pointed out, so there's quite strong advice both to council and government available through those documents. And I think that perhaps when the dust of the election settles, maybe some considered rethinking might go on.
Yes, let's hope so. I mean, just as a side issue to that, we in the council this year, you know, we've had this kind of notion of for instance, of, you know, how do you get cyclists across the bridge, you know, and we had that you know, scheme there at one point that's going to cost $800 million or something, but in the which, you know, essentially sunk it. But we in that, in the transport committee, we've had a couple of boat operators have come along who are keen to get bike ferries to go and across from existing infrastructure from Northcote, Birkenhead, Bayswater across to the city, and, you know, happy to come up with the craft and, you know, build it, crew it, and as long as they, you know, they get some reasonable guarantee on you know, on fare incomes to start off. Now they're almost ready to go, these entities, but again, there seems to be a reluctance on this sort of kind of low-cost, pragmatic solution that could fill the interim gap, and, you know, and just at least improve, you know, that cycling connection, for instance, if there's people who want to cycle across. But that has really struggled to get any traction, even though these companies are, you know, they're credible, they have business cases, and they're keen, ready to go, and basically using what's already there. But they've struggled to really get too much of a response from the relevant authorities. And I think, you know, that in microcosm is part of the bigger transport problem with both council and NZTA at times, is that some of the lower cost, pragmatic, quickly implementable solutions are just not considered. It has to be the whole 10 yards or nothing. And I think that rules out then incremental improvements while you're waiting, you know, to do some of the substantial infrastructure.
Yeah, it's very frustrating when you can see very clear solutions, but you haven't got a pathway to implement them. And I think a lot of people have come up with the idea that local feeder buses would help seniors get around more easily in the off-peak period. And there are certainly people look at the buses carrying very few passengers going around all day, every day, and the cost of running those, and say, well, look, in other cities, they have these smaller feeder buses. That's what seniors need when they can't walk the 800 metres to the nearest bus stop, which they are required to do often here.
Yes, and that seems to be getting some belated recognition in Auckland Transport at the moment. That, you know, doesn't the bus driver or wages, of course, isn't any different from a smaller van as compared to a bigger bus, but certainly as far as convenience and attraction, I think, you know, the smaller kind of mini cab type vans, and I remember, you know, some of the bus companies even used to have these back in the 80s.
Well, that's right. We've been there. We know it works. Well, I have to call a halt now because we're coming to the end of the program, but we will get you back and we'll have you talk more about infrastructure next time.
Yes, certainly, Anne-Marie. I look forward to that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thanks for today's input, John.
Thank you.
And to our listeners, I hope you enjoy your day of the older person and enjoy having fun. And we'll see you next time. together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.